Accession number 33202, Reel 8.
Terry Light, Reel 8.
So continuing this night march, as I remember it, it's one of the highlights of my latter days at the Army. We laid out the tapes and the markers for the assault companies to follow up, A, B, C, D, and support. And somewhere behind us, things went wrong. And it ended up, to coin a phrase, a complete shambles, this night march. In other words, companies got mixed up with one another and all sorts of things happened. But anyway, the final assault took place in the early hours of the morning in darkness with the enemy defending the heights above Westbury and Veery lights going up and dud ammunition being fired, you know, everybody charging and making a lot of noise and a lot of laughing and larking around as far as I was concerned. And then at dawn, breakfast was brought out by the Army Catering Corps from Warminster. We had our breakfast and we were taken by convoy back to Aldershot. That was one exercise. Now the other exercise, which I found most interesting, and this took place in the latter part of June.
June 57.
Yes. We were divided up into two sections, four of each. I led one, Sparrow in his usual way, ducked it, stayed back to hold the fort, as you might say, at Aldershot. And the other section was led by Mr. Burke. And it was really an initiative test. We were allowed to take field rations, and we had to get from, well, we were dropped just outside of Aldershot on the, what was then, or still is, I suppose, the A303. There were no motorways then. And we had to get from Aldershot onto Dartmoor, off of Dartmoor to Oakhampton Station to catch the train back within 3 days. And the caveats were, spend no money. You must cross Force March, do a night march across Cranberry Chase, which is on the borders, there's some high ground on the borders of South Wiltshire and Dorset. And do a force march across there. You are allowed to hitchhike from a lift. And get onto Dartmoor, and not exactly in the middle of Dartmoor, but there is a place known as Cranmere Pool. And in Cranmere Pool, there is a post box. And the postman never goes there, Royal Mail. But you go there with a postcard, you put the postcard, a written postcard, into the post box, and you open it up, and you take the previous visitors, their cards out, and then you go onward to civilization. In our case, it was Oakhampton. So the task was to prove that you'd been to that Cranmere Pool at isolated, supposed to be, I'm not sure it is, but it's supposed to be one of the most isolated places in England. It's certainly the most isolated post box in England. It's still there. So the four of us, I never saw Mr. Burke in his section at all after that, until we got back to Aldershot. As I say, we had to do this in 3 days, force marching, hitchhiking on long distance lorry drivers, milk floats, the lot. By that, we got eventually found ourselves at Exeter on the, it would have been the evening of the second day. We then made our way down the, we got a lift on the A38 as far as Buckfastleigh Abbey. And there we had to abandon the motorway, the roadway as it was, the main arterial road going to Plymouth, and strike up onto the moor. And really it was marching through the night at dawn on the third day, by compass and by luck, we found ourselves at Cranmere Pool, did the necessary identification, card in, card out, and then did a forced march to Okehampton and caught the next train back to Paddington, Paddington to Aldershot, and we got back to Aldershot Corona Barracks in the evening of the third day. So we got back in the third time, within the limited time. And Mr. Burke and his trio, they got in just after us, although we never saw them at all. Now, that was my last field exercise in the army, most enjoyable. And then I was, my time up, early July.
Can you just talk me through that process of leaving?
Yeah. Well, you're really kicking heels, kicking your time. You don't know what to do, because they don't know what to do with you in any case. But you've got in your sweaty hand that the necessary discharge papers. So early July, the battalion had gone off on its annual leave. In other words, Corona Barracks was like a ghost town, ghost barracks. And I had to go before CSN Baker, who was the company sergeant major for headquarter company. Major Scragg, who was the officer commanding headquarter company, was on leave. So Mr. Baker took me up before Regimental Sergeant Major Alcock. And then I was, the acting commanding officer was Major Norman, because the CO and the 2IC were on leave. And now I don't know if have you interviewed anybody from Charlie Company, Major Norman's company, as was? No, it's a pity. Major Norman, lovely man. He tried to persuade me, you know, I presented my papers and I said, you know, these are my discharge papers, sir, I'm about to leave the army, etc., etc. And he listened to me, where I'd come from and where I was wanted to go. I wanted to, you know, take up my career again, as I saw it. And bless him, he tried his hard to persuade me to sign on the dotted line. You know, pulled out all the stops on the benefits of, and, you know, commissioned officer material and all that, but no, thank you. No, I'd done my two years.
Were you tempted at all?
No, no. So, you have respect for certain men and officers, and I have the greatest respect for Norman, as well. He was in charge of Charlie Company, because he was always very understanding when you were trying to supply him with maps or supplies. Some of them were, you know, a bit pompous and arrogant about marking up maps, and they'd want you to do it for them. But anyway, that's another story. So I said goodbye to the army, really, at Major Norman, who, as an aside, I was very sad to hear, he later on joined the Special Air Service, and he was killed in a helicopter crash in Borneo, during the Borneo insurgency. Very sad. So I bade him farewell and walked out of that camp and never looked back. No, correction. My papers told me to report to Tenpara, which was stationed then at the White City,
West London.
West London. So I caught the train up to Paddington, and I remember I had a haircut in Paddington station while I was waiting for my train, or waiting for the, I'm not sure if it was underground or over service out to the White City. Now, I should explain, by this time, I had in my pocket an appointment with a company called Pfizer, a pharmaceutical company called Pfizer. They never interviewed me, but they'd given me this appointment in product development, and they wanted me to go to Northern Ireland. So I had this, I had a job, straight out, straight, you know, decent salary and everything else. So I had a haircut, waited around, caught the train to the underground or whatever it was, to the White City, reported to the, there was a captain in Tanpara, Army Emergency Reserve, which I was then on. And he tried to persuade me, you know, wanted to know where I was going to live and what I was going to do, and would I join his illustrious battalion, you know, experience of somebody coming from three peril, that's the sort of man they wanted, blah, blah, blah. I told him bluntly I had a job and I was going to Northern Ireland. And that was the end of the story. So I marched out there and I was away, and I went down, came down to Bath with my parents. I think I spent about a week with my parents here, and then joined the agricultural division of Pfizer in the research and development division, and had a training, spent some time in company training at Pfizer. We were then located at Folkestone, although they're now at Sandwich, and from there flew direct to Northern Ireland, and that was that. So I started my career with Pfizer product development, in other words. Sorry?
At last.
At last, yes. Yep.
It's a lot, hang on, I just need to start it again before I stop it.